Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Hullamal captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park, twisting, shouting, shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MSC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jay and Buster, we'll look back in the Ross County game, which seems quite some time ago. We'll go over the coming week and the fixture against Aberdeen at Pittodrie on Saturday. Look back in the MSC podcast, 25 greatest post-war players event on Friday there. And we'll see what else takes our fancy over the next three quarters of an hour or so. Guys, welcome along.
Cheers.
Hello.
Jay, I'll start with yourself, and as I say, it does seem like quite a while ago that we endured the disappointment at Ross County, 3-0 down at half time, but a spirited performance in the second half, and perhaps in the end we could have actually sneaked a point. That being said, back-to-back league defeats, it's not been many instances this season where we've been looking back in games and thinking it was both disappointing performances and disappointing results, but I guess the defeat to Hibs and then following it up with the defeat to Ross County, that has been the case there.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a really, really positive start to the season, both on and off the park, and that's not changed in the last couple of weeks. But as I said last week, 2 weeks ago when we recorded before the trip to Dingwall, I just felt it was a really, really important game. And, you know, I hope it doesn't prove to be, but, you know, for me, it was as close to a must win at this stage in the season as I think we could have got, because the run we're now into is quite terrifying when you actually look at it. So hopefully we can respond well to it. I mean, it was the kind of game, you know, the first half in particular was just a very strange first half. Ross County, I suppose it was a mix between Ross County being clinical with the three chances they got, and some really poor defending and some individual mistakes from ourselves. So we didn't necessarily deserve to be 3-0 down at half-time. And of course, you're right, second half, obviously getting two goals, Robinson changing it once again, got us back in the game. And we were probably worth a point overall, at the least. But, you know, to go to somewhere like Dingwall, give them a three-goal head start by half-time, you know, you're just shooting yourself in the foot. And although we constantly praise Stephen Robinson, and he deserves a lot of praise for making changes, you know, we're going to have to get to a point in the season where those changes aren't as required as much as they are now, because it's becoming a regular theme that we're starting games and then we're talking in the podcast a week later about how good Robinson was at changing things. I would like to see us go into, you know, the next couple of games and just starting well from the start and making changes that are maybe, you know, replacing tired legs or shoring up the back rather than having to respond to things not going our way.
Buster, it's absolutely imperative to note, I suppose, that three goals conceded in the first half. I would say of the three goals, at least two of them were very much avoidable. We've got a game against Aberdeen who are flying high at the top of the table. We then play three games against Celtic who have went 60-odd games undefeated and scored hundreds of goals during that time, quite often blown teams off the park. We have to get it right defensively. Here, we're almost out the game by half-time through our own errors. That's a disappointing side of things and something that we certainly need to be working on and hopefully have been working on over the short international break.
Yeah, as you say, it's something which is becoming a bit of a... Well, basically, since the Rangers semi-final, you know, I've had people who support other teams come up to me and say, that Cedric Keeper is rotten. You know, no matter who we're playing, I found myself at the start saying, he had a bad game against Rangers, but he's been brilliant. Then it was like the bad game after that, but he's been brilliant. He seems to have gone off the ball badly, and you know, as I say, I think he was to blame for at least one of them. I've not watched the highlights now in about a week. I think he was to blame for at least one of them against Ross County as well. You know, and as Jay says as well, we need to sort of get these things right before the game rather than in the middle of the game, because as you say, whether or not Ross County were conical or whether or not it was due to the fact that we were making these errors, I can't even really exactly mind, but I think they had three chances, maybe four chances, and they scored three goals. So, you know, fair play to Ross County for being that conical, but as Jay said as well, these goals were avoidable. And as you said yourself, we've now got a run where away to Aberdeen, the cup final, home and away to Celtic, I think it's Hearts, Kilmarnock, Partick Thistle, I don't know if it's in that order, but I think, you know, that these are all away games that we've got coming up. So it was good to get the bunch of home games together at the start of the season, get all the points on the board, start looking at things positively rather than, you know, how far away from the bottom team, or thank God we're not the bottom teams it's been for the last couple of years. But it's, you know, we're coming up to a tough point here, and I think we really need to start getting things right, whether or not it's changing the, you know, from the back three to a back four or whatever at the moment, I don't know, but we've got a couple of hard games coming up, and it's something we need to start getting right.
And Jay, we've all mentioned it there in the start, the last couple of results don't take anything away from how positive the start to the season has been, and I think that's quite a significant thing as well. Quite often a couple of defeats in recent times would have people really reaching for the panic button and really beginning to worry about where that was going to take us. We still have a cup final to look forward to. Yes, we've got back-to-back defeats and a poor record in the last couple of seasons at Pittodrie, but still saying that, I still believe that Stephen Robinson will have the team very well prepared for that game next or on Saturday, and we'll go and give it a right good go, because for all that we were dreadful in the first half and the defensive lapses were very, very costly to go 3-0 down, to then respond and get two goals back in the second half, that does show that the team's got a wee bit more mettle and a wee bit more fight and desire than they've had in previous years.
Oh no, as I said at the start, you know, there's still plenty of positives. Still fully support Stephen Robinson, think he's doing a fantastic job. I think the squad that he's put together is a really, really strong one, not just in the context of, you know, the last couple of seasons at Fir Park, but also just in the context of the league as a whole. I think you look at a lot of the teams that are, you know, still beneath us in the league, and not a lot of them jump out as having stronger squads than ourselves. So, you know, I'm still very much behind the manager, still reckon we're doing a fantastic, he's doing a fantastic job. And a final, you know what I mean? So it's certainly not doom and gloom. It's just at the end of the day, and I think Robinson himself would want to see expectations rise. I'm sure he doesn't want to rest in his laurels and think, oh, well, had a good start to the season, that's it, job done. I mean, you know, we're football fans, and with that, a good start to the season, you want to see that maintained. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that we suddenly think we've got a right to go to Ross County and win, but you still want to pick up on the things that aren't going well. And Buster makes a good point about Cedric Kipre, who, again, I think will turn out to be a really, really good bit of business for the club, not just getting him in the free, but getting him signed up on a longer deal very quickly. But we also need to remember, although he's built like a brick shit house, he's still only 20 years old. He's still played a very, very small number of games in top and first team football. So it might be within his interest to perhaps bring somebody like Stevie Hamill into the back line and replace him. So there are changes that can be made. I must say, I think Bowman, I'm not sure why Bowman didn't start at Dingwall. I think that was a mistake. It's easy to say with hindsight, because he obviously came on and changed the game, but I think just the way, you know, he's played this season and what he's contributed, so I thought that was a mistake. So, you know, picking up on the mistakes that the manager's made, picking up on the mistakes that the players have made, maybe being a wee bit critical at times, you know, it doesn't undo the fantastic work that they've done. And you're right, there's no panic buttons being pressed by anybody. I think everybody understands that we're in the midst of a really positive thing, both on and off the park. You know, everything else that's going on, the club's in a really good place at the moment, and a couple of bad results don't change that, and that's good to see, because that's not always been the case with Motherwell fans.
Bustad, we look ahead and the game on Saturday at Pittodrie, the last game before we go to Hampden for the cup final, and I guess a lot of the focus just now is on the cup final. Tickets went on sale last week, there's queues outside Fir Park, there's it feels like everybody that you meet in and around the town is all talking about this big game. But for Stephen Robinson and Keith Lasley, the challenge will be to set all the players' minds on what comes first, and that is the very difficult prospect of a trip to Pittodrie. Last season there was obviously the horrendous night under Mark McGee for the 7-2 defeat. We were quite unlucky later on in the season, a late goal won it for Aberdeen on that occasion. This will be a very difficult one, but focus is very much key in this one.
Yeah, I've actually just brought up the league table there just to see. I knew they were second. I knew they were, you know, going second best, but I didn't realise that they were kind of similar record to Celtic, other than they've lost one game. I don't even know who that was against, but you've seen it when, you know, in the earlier part of the season when we played them twice in a week again, where the first time we bore them out of the water, second time they learned from that, and they did what they needed to do to get a result. It was like watching two different teams at the time, but they're obviously a talented bunch. They've been, you know, up there since Rangers died and came back. They've always been sort of, you know, second, third in the league. So it's going to be very, very hard, basically. I can't even remember, other than, you know, the one where we beat them to second, I can't remember the last time we even had a decent performance up in Pittodrie. So I'm not even really too sure as to if we've ever had a decent performance up there, because even that day it was an utter shit show. But it's going to be very hard, and as we've mentioned, you know, this run of games in general coming up is going to be very, very hard. I think it was me and you, Spar, that were talking about at the start of the season how Partick Thistle's run at the start of the season was very hard, and they struggled to pick up points after that. When they came to Fir Park, they were absolutely rotten. So you don't really want to begin a cup final on the back of three possible defeats, because it's going to be very hard to sort of come out of that mindset. Although it's a different game, it's a different setting, it's a different standing. You know, there's something major to play for. Again, when it comes to the cup final. And I know we're trying to avoid talking about the cup final because we're talking about the Aberdeen game here, but we don't really want to go into that in the back of three defeats. So it'd be nice if we could go up there and put in a decent performance and maybe come away with a point.
Jay, you look back to, and I know Buster just said we don't really want to talk about the cup final, but you look back to the Scottish Cup final in 2011, and you can remember going to Tannadice, and I think with two or three games to go, and getting turned over, I think it was 5-1, and we just never kicked a ball. And then we went to Celtic Park on the final day of the season, the same opponents that we were facing the following week, and get a real trouncing in that day as well. It wasn't ideal preparation. It felt like the players had switched off and had almost completely turned their focus to the final, despite the season not having finished. This is clearly a bit different with the game happening at the end of November. There's still going to be plenty of league games to play regardless of the final, but I think Stephen Robinson seems to have, as soon as we won the semi-final, started to downplay the significance of the final and tried to focus the guys on league matters. That being said, we've now played three games since the semi-final, 1-1, lost 2. It's kind of hard to judge where the players are mentally. I know Stephen Robbins will obviously insist that we're completely focused on the Aberdeen game, but it must be very difficult for the players to maintain that focus and not start kind of daydreaming towards what happens the following week.
I'm I'm not too sure. I mean, the run up to the final in 2011, I'm not sure how much of it was to do with the players themselves being focused on the final and more to do with Stuart McCall chopping and changing the team every week. There was no steadiness or consistency to the selection. Even the cup final itself, there was no consistency because you ended up with Stevie Hamill at defensive mid. For me, I'm not sure that's what it was. In terms of this, I mean, and applying the same logic to this, I don't know if you can say that it's the players have got their minds on the cup final. They very well might talk about it or be thinking about it in training. I'd be very surprised if during a 90-minute game on a Saturday, they're thinking about, you know, Hampden in a couple of weeks' time. Particularly, you know, I think that second half at Dingwall, although we didn't get back into the game, I think that second half at Dingwall showed, as you said yourself, we still have that fighting mentality and that kind of never say die mentality, and that's not the kind of mentality I would expect from a side just simply daydreaming about the cup final. So I think, it, you know, the Stuart McCall 2011 scenario was more to do with the team selection rather than anything to do with mentality. But, you know, the comparisons are there. Nobody wants to be getting into such a big game on the back of defeats. And, you know, again, that's another reason why I said that the trip to Dingwall was so important, because the games we now have are a lot more difficult. And saying that, you know, Busta mentions that Aberdeen's form, you know, is obviously the same as Celtic's, apart from the defeat, which was to Celtic a couple of weeks ago. But even the games, you know, they've drawn with Accies at the weekend there. They've got a narrow win against Ross County. They had a narrow win at Easter Road. So, you know, they're not going out and obliterating teams. So I'm certainly not, you know, the towel hasn't been chucked in terms of that's us, we're going into a cup final on the back of three defeats or four defeats or whatever it's going to be. You know, I still think there's points to be gained in the run up to the final, but obviously it would be it would make an incredibly difficult challenge seem all the more difficult if you were going into it on a really poor run.
I'm just actually looking at the 2011 results following the cup semi-final against St Johnstone. We went to Tynecastle and drew 3-3 when we were 3-0 down in that game.
I know, you left, didn't you?
Yeah.
That's right.
See, this is...
John Sutton scoring an equaliser.
This is kind of what my opening gambit was going to be if we had equalised at Ross County the other week when you guys buggered off. but unfortunately, it didn't come to pass. Then it was a 5-0 defeat at home to Rangers, 4-0 away to Dundee United. Steve Jones scored in a 1-1 draw against Kilmarnock, and then a 4-0 defeat at Celtic Park. So, yeah, certainly not.
Did Steve Jones play in that final?
I don't know. He scored two games to go in the season. I don't think he played in the cup final day, did he?
No, I'm just asking because to be honest with you, you know, that game we got beat, so you put it behind us, but I'd even forgot Steve Jones existed. That'd be tragic if he was in that cup final team.
He was on the bench and he came on with 10 minutes to go for Jamie Murphy.
That's not as tragic, but nearly.
Yeah, it's not great, is it? But then, I suppose when you compare these results, we've lost a game 1-0 and 3-2, so losing what? That's, I'm just trying to do the sums in my head here, 17 goals or something like that in the last four games of the season. We're certainly in better fettle than that, and I think that there is a sense that Robinson is nearing a settled 11. What's your take on the back line though? Because the back three was kind of point of contention with us earlier on in the season. I think that we began to adjust to it, and now we're beginning to see a couple of frailties again. The issue becomes when one of these back three have an off day, then we're really going to struggle, isn't it?
When we started it last season, going back to when Robinson took over, when we started with a back season, I was very critical of it. At that point, I don't think we had the ideal players for it. I know Hennigan, he obviously started this season well, but he played in the right-hand side of the three, and he was made to look like a mug quite a lot. Stevie Robinson told us at the time, you know, I've got a job to do and I'm going to do it any way I can. It's not going to be pretty. And that's what he done, fair play to him. But I thought the back three thing was maybe just going to be there. But what he did was he's obviously come in with that idea. I think I said this to you, Zell. I don't know if I've said it on here, but he gave us a way of playing, an idea of how we want to play football, rather than just having 11 players that you want to play and squeezing them into a 4-4-2 or a 4-5-1. He's come up with a sort of, this is how we want to play. I'm going to bring in players who can help me play that way. A couple of them, obviously, very versatile, can go, you know, Richard Tate left or right, Chrissy Cadd midfield, right back, whatever, you know. So it started really, really well for us. And I don't think there was anything wrong with it. So I thought we were doing really well. We've got, like, you know, it was Ben who was, you know, the big, tall, nonsense centre and half. And it's a bit Peter Hartley now, who's that guy. Charles Dunn's strong and fast. He's there to, you know, make up any sort of, if MD goes past MD, he's there to come across and use his pace, basically. And instead of the key players, we said, you know, he started brilliantly. He looked nice, good on the ball, very composed. You know, he started to tail away a wee bit now, but, you know, that'll come and go, as you say, he's a young boy. So it was something which, the only at the start of this season, the only thought I think I was unsure of was, it wasn't getting the best out of Elliot Freer. And I still don't think it would be, but Elliot Freer, I think Elliot Freer's a fantastic winger, so, you know, it's when he's not in the team, I'm a bit disappointed, but we seem to be sticking with it, you know, to start games, which is, again, fair enough, if that's how we want to play. But as you mentioned, you know, Ross County there before, we've changed it, we went to a back four, we've got guys like Freer then play in his left wing position. So it's maybe something which, I don't know if it's something we should be looking at changing, or if it's something we can maybe, you know, work on something that would make it a bit more adaptable during the game, rather than, you know, having to constantly change it at half time if something's not working. You know, maybe just move somebody in or out, or, you know, into midfield or whatever we can do, basically. But again, looking past Aberdeen, unfortunately, or maybe in Aberdeen as well here, you know, are we maybe going to play the back four that we sort of finished with at Ross County, in the hope that we can get sort of used to that, make that a bit more solid, so that we don't get caught in the channels with guys like Scott Sinclair or Paddy Roberts or James Forrest, you know, because they're going to be sitting right in behind guys like Tate, guys like maybe Freer or Cadden, whoever it is that plays. They're going to wait in name going forward, and they're going to sit in that space that Cedric Kiepre has sort of struggled with the ball's coming over his head into the space behind Cadden. And I think, to be fair, coming Aberdeen here, I think we'll probably play four at the back, and sort of with one eye on the sort of final, thinking we can't really play two wing backs against guys like Scott Sinclair, Paddy Roberts, James Forrest, or whoever plays for them, because I think that's where we'd lose the game against Celtic. I think we'll have to go with a back four against them, so I think we'll probably see that against Aberdeen.
And I guess it's almost impossible to avoid talking or drifting towards the cup final, I suppose, but you wouldn't imagine, though, Jay, that as much as Buster was saying, I think that we might trial the back four, you're not going to use a fixture at Pittodrie in the league as a dress rehearsal for the three meetings that are coming up against Celtic?
Oh, no, I mean, if we go, you're right, if we go with a back four at Pittodrie, it will be primarily because Stephen Robinson thinks that is a good way to go into that game. I mean, I think, you know, I could certainly see it, and I think that it wouldn't be the worst idea, you know, going at the moment, because we do look a little bit shaky at the back at the moment. Just a couple of moments that the likes of Kiepre and Dunn have maybe looked a little bit wobbly. And the problem is, as Buster said earlier, when you've got a back three, you know, that's real pressure on yourself. If you've got an extra man in there and somebody makes a mistake, you can at least try and combat it a little bit better. But, you know, you just have to think back. You know, the one that kind of just jumped into my head there was Kiepre sort of being caught under the ball and heading the ball kind of almost kind of up back towards his own goals at Hampden in the semi-final, and luckily we didn't get caught out there. But that's the kind of thing that if you've got a back four, perhaps your right back or somebody can maybe, you know, fill in round the back and get back and put the striker under pressure. But when you've got a back three, as much as Charles Dunn's got the pace to get back, when there is a mistake, it can really, really cost you. And Buster makes a really good point in terms of the wingers that Celtic have got. You know, do you really want to see the likes of Paddy Roberts or James Forrest or Sinclair getting in behind our wing backs? I mean, it would be horrific to watch. So I agree that a back four is probably a way to go in the final. I can see the benefits in doing it at Pittodrie as well, both in terms of winning the game on the day and preparing for the final. I certainly agree. I don't think that Robinson would look at Pittodrie and say, right, we can try this for the final. I think he'll be going, and all priority will be winning at least a point up there. All eyes will be on that game. But if there's any benefits to going to that back four, which includes that you've tried it out before the final, then I'd be all for it. Because I think that when you look at our squad, you know, again, guys like Freer, like Buster says, when you look at our squad, there is a very good squad there that can fit into a 4-4-2 or a 4-5-1 or whatever you want. So it's certainly not out of the agenda or something that we shouldn't be looking at. And to be honest, nowadays, a team with the quality that we've got in our squad in the top flight or in any top flight should be able to adapt, should be able to, you know, slot into a back four or a back three depending on the opponents without this kind of big, long, drawn-out conversation about it. It should just be natural. If we go into Saturday with a back four, we should be comfortable doing that. We should have the players that we can get into that game confident doing that.
I think that, you know, no matter Aberdeen and Celtic here, no matter what game we're talking about, if we go a defensive four, I think we have to go 4-4-2. So I don't think Louis Moult up top himself.
Yeah,
right. Don't get me wrong, he still does a great job. He'll run his arse off. He'll run a bit all day. But I think as you mentioned earlier, Jay, I don't know why Bowman didn't start against Ross County, because I think the two of them complement each other so well. You know, I think Bowman's got 5 or 6 goals, and you know, Louis gets 7 or 8 or 9 or whatever it is. So it's I think Aberdeen, no matter who we're playing, I think we have to play two up front, because I don't think either of them, and Louis Moult's our main man, let's not lie, I don't think they would really suit playing themselves.
Another element of the game on Saturday, Jay, is that there's been a lot of speculation over the future of Derek McInnes at Aberdeen. We're still no clearer on who Rangers are going to appoint. We hope it's someone hilarious, but we'll soon find out. That's something that, I suppose, when there's been a wee bit of downtime as well with international break, maybe it does unsettle the Aberdeen players, the Aberdeen fans. They'll be, even if they believe, you know, what their supporters are like, if they even think that McInnes is considering a move to Rangers, they're going to be quite antsy, and they're not the most... they're not the biggest fans of Rangers, shall we say, so that's...
None of us are.
It could certainly be an element of it, though. It could maybe cause a wee bit of distraction in their camp, and that would certainly be a good thing for us.
Yeah, I mean, I think it rumbles on so long. You know, I know that it probably hasn't been as long as it's felt, but these kind of things do seem... You kind of just assume, perhaps we're all guilty of it, of being a little bit naive and forgetting just how... kind of low down the pecking order this new Rangers is compared to their old selves, because it used to be the case, the old Rangers, if they wanted Derek McInnes, they would have been appointed the next day. But because it's this wee diddy mob, you know, it seems to kind of rumble on and rumble on and rumble on, and it's going to cause that kind of aggro. You know, we're talking about, and I'm obviously it's not the majority, but we're talking about a support up in Pittodrie, some of whom thought it was a good idea to go along with Pittodrie and boo Ryan Jack in a Scotland shirt. I mean, that's the kind of mentality you're dealing with. So the idea that those same fans wouldn't be getting on the back of somebody like Derek McInnes while this is rumbling on, you know, I think they probably would be, because of who it is that he's been linked with. But that said, I mean, as much as Derek McInnes obviously has strong Rangers leanings, is he daft enough to go there? I mean, he's already turned down Sunderland, which, you know, he was perhaps right to do when you look at how they've fallen. Would he see the same at Ibrox? I mean, I don't know. So it's interesting to see if he will go or will he won't. I think the longer it rumbles on, the less likely it is he will go. But you're right, the longer it rumbles on, it also means that it's a, you know, it's a disruption that we can hopefully take advantage of. Of course, it may have sorted itself one way or another by Saturday, but it's the kind of thing where, yeah, maybe not the players as such. I'm sure the players will go out and just do their job for Aberdeen. But the fans, yeah, I'd be very surprised if they don't start to get on his back a little bit. As I said earlier, the results recently, although they have picked up wins, they haven't been the best, you know, narrow goals. And of course, they got a point against Accies. So if we can go there, frustrate them, maybe get an early goal, then, yeah, you could certainly see the home support starting to get on the manager's back.
And Bust, I talked about the 7-2 and the disappointment at Pittodrie last season, but I suppose it's quite significant as well to remember the Betfred League Cup quarter-final and the fantastic performance that Motherwell put in that night. Absolutely destroyed Aberdeen. There was the 3-0 scoreline certainly didn't flatter us. We need to try and kind of grab some of the spirit and performance levels from that day and not look back on the disappointments in recent times, particularly because we've got a completely new squad travelling to Pittodrie for the first time.
Yeah, you know, as you say, the League Cup quarter-final, I mentioned it earlier myself, you know, it was a fantastic day for Motherwell fans. Even, you know, there was even when you're on your pie and bovros and whatever, you're reading Aberdeen fans, there was absolutely no questions about it that Motherwell destroyed them. As you said, 3-0 was nowhere near flattering. So it's those sort of games we have to look at. Again, as I mentioned, it was only a couple of days later, but Aberdeen learnt their lessons from that, came out fighting, and it was like two different teams we played. So you know, there's obviously been a few weeks since we last played, but let's hope let's hope that we learn a wee bit about them as well. You know, they're maybe going to come out the same way they did the second time. We have to be that bit. You know, we were accused of maybe being a bit harsh and a bit maybe kicking them off the park a wee bit like they did to us in the second game. So let's hope that it's going to be basically a classic game where the 2 years are going at it hard, and let's hope that we can. Well, basically everybody's hoping for a win, there's no doubt about that, but if we come away with a point, I don't think anybody will be disappointed.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about Friday night's Off Air 3 launch and the 25 Greatest Players Awards night, which was easily the most successful and the best night that we've had in terms of our events. We've had a few where you kind of stand at the back and just really wish there was more people there to enjoy the night. It certainly wasn't the case on Friday night, where we had a packed David Cooper suite. The players that turned up, 11 of the top 25. We had a very late cameo from Stevie Kirk, who came on as a super sub into the Q&A. It was a really special one, wasn't it, Jay? The players deserve a special mention for the brilliant reaction to the Q&A. They mingled with the fans for the best part of the night. I don't think anyone that was there would have went home disappointed.
No, not at all. You know, obviously there might be a slight bias because, you know, obviously it was yourself in the podcast that kind of organised it. But, you know, out of all the Motherwell-related events that I've been to in my lifetime, it's up there, if not the best. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. You know, like, say, was it Tommy Coyne, McFadden, Lasley, Clarkson, Hamill, Craigan, Corrigan, Martin, Kirk, Pettigrew, Bobby Graham, and then, you know, obviously Weekend Debt and Banter Thieves playing tunes. Philip Speedy was tremendous as a compere. I mean, it was just, everything was ideal. And you're right, the actual Q&As themselves were cracking. I mean, I've said to you before that Q&As tend to bore me a little bit. It's just not something I'm really into. But I thought that there was not a dull moment through either of the Q&As. Obviously, there was two different panels in the night. Some of the stories were fantastic. And also, just the kind of how candid a lot of the players were. You know, there wasn't this kind of idea that they had to be kind of prim and proper. You know, there was a lot of name-checking, some naughty language. And it was just, the whole thing was just absolutely fantastic. So I'm sure everybody who was there In fact, we know everybody who was there had a great night, because you just have to look at the podcast Twitter and you know, on social media, on Facebook and things like that, to just see how great a night people had. So it was absolutely brilliant, and it was really fitting that it was such a good event for something that honours, you know, the 25 best post-war players.
And Buster, there's been a bit of debate over the list, which is available on the podcast website. But I think overall we've got to be pretty satisfied that there's a good balance there between players young and old. There's obviously a certain element, there's been names that have been mentioned that haven't made the list. When you've got a kind of younger demographic, I suppose, and the majority of the votes did come online, that's to be expected, that you're going to see a lot more votes for the more modern day players. But that being said, guys like Keith McRae, Charlie Aitken, Andy Payton, all featured on the list. Dean St John, that's just off the top of my head, a couple of names from the older generation. That was nice to see as well.
No, it was, you know, obviously, if you were there, yourselves, you're aware I missed it. Stupidly double booked myself and then got lazy. Missed the train, got lazy, and then by the time I was getting the next train, it would have been closing time, so I missed it basically. And then I'm gutted, to be honest with you. At the time, I thought, you know what, the guys are obviously having a great time. I'm glad it's gone so well, but now I'm just thinking, I can't believe I was so fucking stupid and missed it. No, honestly, I'm not even kidding on, man. It's ridiculous. As you says though, when you're obviously, you know, I don't really do much on the podcast Twitter, but it's linked into my phone. And, you know, as Jay was tweeting it out, there was people who obviously couldn't make it either, tweeting along saying, that looks fantastic. And then once it finished, you know, by the time I got in the house, maybe 11 o'clock or whatever, by the time, you know, it finished and all the tweets were up and people were coming home, my phone was going mental. It went mental, you know, basically all the way through Saturday as well. You know, so it's, again, you know, I know you work very hard on it as well, Sparta. Jay, I know you've done a lot of things for Sparta as well, so it's, to yourselves, really, congratulations, guys. The night was fantastic. I've started collecting my books after you, Sparta. I've started to actually pay you for them as well, but once I get them, I'm sure I'll have a fantastic read of it as well. So it's great to see that everybody there had a great time. You know, half of these players we've spoke to before, and they're always good guys. And you know, you do think, are they just doing this out of courtesy because they might? But even like as you seen Stevie Craigan's interview in the paper the other day, you know, he said something along the lines of, he felt as if he owed people something. But when you're constantly willing to give up your time, you know, just to come along and tell a few stories and that, you these sort of guys, you know, they're obviously not getting any money off us for it, so it's a big thank you goes out to them as well, and it's fantastic to see them so willing to be so involved.
Yeah, and Jay mentioned Phil Speedy, who did a fantastic job in the night. Also, our title sponsors, Patterson's Trophy Supplies, who provided the fantastic awards for the occasion. We owe them a huge amount of gratitude for the time, yep, and effort they put into these, and obviously the considerable expense too. The significant part in terms of the fundraising is the £1,063 that's been donated to the Well Society. That will also be doubled by Les Hutchison, so a fantastic sum of over £2,000 going into the club coffers. It's a very satisfying thing to be able to support the club in that way, isn't it, Jay? And the Double Your Money initiative, perhaps at times I've been a wee bit down on it, and the fact that I believed that there should have been more pushes and more initiatives to try and take advantage of it. But I suppose while doing that, we hadn't done anything, so now we have. And and as I've said previously before, I really like the idea of us doing something and then Les Hutchison having to put his hand in his pocket. It's very satisfying.
I think I said to you as well, you know, I agree. I think earlier in the year in particular, there wasn't enough done with the Double Your Money thing, and a lot of people have been rightfully critical of it, or the perceived lack of reaction to it. in terms of putting some sort of initiatives in and things like that. But I think as the sort of the deadline nears, I think that there's a little bit more progress being made. I mean, you know, you have the 120, 130 grand anyway that comes into the Welsh Society every year, and then on top of that, you have the money, you know, that Eton, you know, that standalone isolated evening raised. You've got the Well Boys, of course, doing their display and raising, you know, money in that regard, which will be doubled. A lot of little fundraising efforts throughout the year, such as the bucket collections at Aberdeen, which raised a really surprising amount. I was quite surprised at just how much money were in those. And then when you factor in the share sale now, obviously it remains to be seen between now and the end of the year just how successful that will be. But I think by the end of the year, it will, you know, be a total that we could at least be happy with. Might not be maxed out. It might not be the, you know, the very top figure that Les Hutchison had set. But I think we won't be far off it, and I think we can all be quite pleased with that.
Yeah, another thing to mention is that the League Cup scarves, the tartan scarves, are another thing that will be donated to the society and doubled as well. So if you've got an interest in one of them, then snap them up, and that'll be an extra a bit in the club coffers as well. The winner of the 25 greatest post-war players was Davy Cooper, and I had the pleasure to speak to his brother John on Friday. He wasn't able to make the event just due to personal reasons, to be perfectly honest. He had said that he's not been to a game at Ibrox or Fir Park since Davy's death, which is quite sad to hear. But he shared some lovely memories of Davy's time at Motherwell and expressed how much Davy enjoyed playing for Motherwell. And I think we could all agree that certainly showed in the park, as he played such a pivotal role in helping us win the Scottish Cup in 1991. And just generally, his performances during his time at Motherwell were anything but the kind of perceived player that we were getting of someone that was perhaps by his sell-by date and was just coming to wind down his career. It was a very deserved award, and the contributions that Davy Cooper made to Motherwell Football Club will never be forgotten. Guys, I think that's pretty much all we've got time for tonight. We'll regroup after Saturday's game against Aberdeen and look forward to the week ahead, which will culminate with the Betfred League Cup final on the Sunday.
Aye, sounds good.
No bother, thank you.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you, goodbye. Come home. Brainwashed.
ocean. Now the voice in my head is a ghost singing songs like.